I am prepared, I'll say that. Anyway, I'm Leslie, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm glad to be here, and basically, again, to qualify for this recording session. I had my last drink February 23rd, 1981, which means I've been continuously sober since then, so that's 38 years and change. So, whatever the months, I'm not going to figure that out, but... the second step then, of course, you know, the steps all kind of flow from each other. And I wanted to, the second step is about a spiritual experience. So I always like to go back to the primary source, and that's the big book. It talks about there is an appendix 2 that's called A Spiritual Experience, and it's way in the back on page 567. But it talks about a personality change sufficient to result in recovery. That's what they kind of describe as a spiritual experience, and the purpose of step 2, or the result of step 2, of coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What the book says is that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. And as I've been involved with the program, as I've experienced the program and worked the program, I've seen people who insist they've had, you know, the lightning bolt experience, and many who have had more slow opening experiences. I think, you know, for myself, though, it's very fair to say that by going to meetings and being with people who are working a program and who are living a program, even if it was by accident, even if it was grudging, you know, the miracle of AA can happen even then, you know, if we just bring ourselves to a place where it can happen for us. But this part of the big book talks about the psychologist William James. And, you know, Bill Wilson was a great borrower, I've come to believe. He would read everything, study everything, talk to anybody and everybody, and pull together just an amazing array of ideas. So William James was a psychologist, and he talks about the educational variety of spiritual experience that develops slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. Such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. And, you know, I can say I tried to apply my willpower, my self-discipline, and it never got me anywhere. It never got me anywhere but drunk. I'm reminded of an old analogy that has to do with another bodily function. But anyway, with few exceptions, though, the members find they have tapped into an inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. So, to me, it was kind of wonderful to know that it didn't have to take any specific form. It didn't even have to be real deep. I just had to become aware that there I might have a way to get better if I maybe just stop talking and start doing what people suggest I do. And finally, he goes on to say, that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our, meaning our group experience, can recover, provided he doesn't close his mind to all spiritual concepts. So for me, again, it was another, like, just shut up and drop the debate, Leslie. Just let, you know, open up your mind a little bit. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. I've kind of found that to be true. We need to connect to that inner resource. I needed to connect to an inner resource. I can tell you, when I came into the rooms, I guess I had a God, but I was mad at God. I hated God, as a matter of fact. That's the truth. If I'm honest, that was how I felt. I was very mad. I just was so PO'd that in my mid-20s, here I am with all these old farts who were in World War II, blah, 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 blah. Why, you know, why can't I have any fun? That was how it was. You laugh, but that was how it was. If I can dig up some actual witnesses, they'll swear to it right along with me. But that awareness, I had to become aware. They also used to say that people get kind of funny about God sometimes and the spiritual part of the program. Those old timers used to say that if God chased you out, the booze would chase you back. And that was, I was raised on, that's what I was raised on. And so it was either, to me, it was, I was going to go with this flow, or I was going to be drunk, and I knew what that was like, and I wasn't real interested in that anymore. Then I wanted to go back, because this is the second step, and it grows out of the first step. So I kind of want to circle back a little bit and remind of what the problem was, okay, in my alcoholism. I don't know about yours, but I know this fits mine, because this big book always was scary to me. But it talks about the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. That's, from what I've seen, is true. I mean, I'm betting you all know someone who's died from our disease, one way or the other. I know I certainly did. I know when I was a couple of months in the program, a young man who I worked with in the hospital, well, he was found dead in the street. I knew him from the meetings. I knew him from work. I worked in a hospital in those days. I worked in the laboratory, and he was a custodian in the hospital, and among his duties was he cleaned up in the lab I worked in. So I knew him from the meetings, and it didn't take but a couple of months. It's like, oh my God, Bill is dead. What happened? You know, it was, and he was the first of many, so, you know, to me, I had to not kid myself. This is a fatal disease. It's a fatal disease, and I don't want to play with it. The book goes on, though, in case I want to play with it. It talks about, we are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. And yeah, that was kind of interesting to me, too. So the book then, the chapter We Agnostics, that was another chapter I wore out. I wore out Freedom from Bondage, and I wore out We Agnostics, because I was very mad at God. So I needed that. But what it talks about is, if you were like us, one of these people who've lost their legs, who can't grow new ones anymore, and who are on the path to insanity or death, we have an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And to someone who has some question or doubts about God, you know, we become faced with a dilemma. And what the book tells us a dilemma is, we have a choice to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis. That's not always easy alternatives to face. But in fact, I believe that's the ones that we face. That's the ones that I feel I face. People die. People who started out like me end up dead. Or they find a spiritual way to live and to walk through the steps of the program and learn how to live better. After a while, we had to, if Amir, and see, because I was smart, so a lot of this stuff, I think, and Bill, I think, was a very smart man as well, as far as his borrowing from any sources. But he talks about this in We Agnostics. If Amir code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. And I know that was true for me because I counseled, I read, I pursued, I studied, I churched, I Bible read, whatever, you name it. But it goes on to talk about our human resources as marshaled by the will were not sufficient. They failed utterly. They certainly failed me because I was drunk like every day. So lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where were we to find this power? And here's the amazing thing. That's exactly what this book is about. According to the big book, they tell us that's what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. So that's what this program is about, according to this, not according to me, according to the people who wrote this book, is to find a power greater than ourselves. Now, it's not telling me about what it needs to be. It's just telling me it needs to be greater than me, which I'm a drunk, so it's pretty easy to be greater than me. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. I've not, you know, I've spent a fair amount of time, like many of us in the rooms, what does my higher power look like? Who is he, she, or it? Where does he, she, or it live? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and that's a fine mental exercise. It's way better than getting drunk all the time or thinking of ways to do harm to your neighbor or something. But at this point in my recovery, it doesn't matter to me what God looks like. It doesn't matter what, you know, any of those things. I know from repeated experience that God is. God has my back. God has me covered. God has kept me sober up to this point. God will do the same for you if you will let him. And that's kind of all I need to know. But I had a whole lot of argumentation about that. Let me flip through to my notes too. Step two talks about acceptance and willingness mostly because it says come to believe. It doesn't say fully form a belief, fully concoct a theology, all of that stuff. And it talks about restoring to sanity. My insanity was obvious to anyone who looked. I mean, my insanity has been diagnosable and diagnosed at certain stages of my life, especially in my drinking. Really, to pick up the next drink knowing that I don't know what's going to happen after that is sufficient insanity for me. Okay, because I don't know what's going to happen. I have to be nuts to pick up. I just have to be. But, you know, they're very eloquent and talks about, you know, this the way to the Spirit. I would encourage anyone to read this chapter, but if not, I'm going to read some of it to you anyway. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. like taking some action, like showing up in the rooms, like being willing to participate a little bit by shaking someone's hand. Those simple actions is enough follow-up. That's a start. And I know this, when I read this, see, this was like a tearjerker for me, like reading Freedom from Bondage, because I told you last week, if you were here, I would read that story and I would cry my heart out, and then I'd read it again and I'd cry some more. Well, this was the other thing, because I was so mad at God and I just was so defeated, you know, just so done. But what they tell us in the book is, we found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. So then they had me. They had me. It was open even to me who was mad at God, to don't let prejudice get in the way. I do want to tell you, I'm going to go out of order of my notes, not that you would know any of that, but I said I was very mad at God. I hated God when I got sober. I had a sponsor who was very directive in her way. And so I hated God and I hated women. I hated women. That was part of my sickness. You know, it is what it is. But she told me, ma'am, you know, it's moving on to that second step, and I want you to go to that women's retreat at St. Paul's Monastery. And if you're familiar with Pittsburgh, maybe no one here is, but it was a very AA-friendly Catholic monastery. The Passionist priests ran it. I said, oh my God, Dana, do I have to do this? She said, well, she said, you don't have to stay the whole weekend, but you have to go. And I thought, okay, on those terms, I guess I'll go. She said, give it a try. Shut your mouth, open your ears, because that was another thing they were big on then. Shut your mouth, open your ears. And what I went to that retreat, and it was very uncomfortable, and I went, it was a Friday night to Sunday morning, and I went to the meetings, I went through the motions and, you know, all of that. But they have a beautiful garden, and St. Paul's Monastery is in the south side of Pittsburgh on top of the hill. And when you go into their garden, there's a panoramic view of the city. It's beautiful, beautiful. In the middle of this, like, concrete stuff, there's this beautiful garden, and you can see across the river to the Cathedral of Learning, downtown. It's beautiful. And I remember sitting there, and this is my second step story. It just is, because I was wound up, uncomfortable, locked up with all these women and with God, and I sat there looking out over the city, and, you know, for me, it began with just like a sense of peace. I felt like, I'll describe the feeling, you can believe it or not, but the feeling was, I just felt like everything went out the top of my head like a chimney, you know, just like the smoke out of a chimney. And, you know, nothing was different, but I just felt it was all going to be okay. It was all going to be okay. And that was a start for me. That was enough of a start to take my happy butt, put myself in a location where God could find me, I guess. To me, that was big. I still believe that God lives in person at St. Paul's Monastery. You can dispute me or you can test my hypothesis by going there. But I've always found a lot of peace there, and that was where that God consciousness first hit me, and I was able to just complete the women's retreat and walk forward from there. I was taught to too, that, you know, if I don't believe, make believe, and no one really cared what I thought. What was important was the action I took, and if I took the action, the brain would follow. I was taught to get on my knees and pray. I tell people that now. I've told people I sponsor that from the first people I sponsored until recent times, you know, and when I'm in really in trouble and I'm really facing an issue, I get on my knees. To me, it's like putting myself in a place to make contact with God as I understand Him. So it's a posture of humility to me. It's a posture of petition. I practice yoga. You know, and there's something to, and I think, I don't know, but I think there's something to assuming a posture of petition and humility and gratitude and prayer and openness that speaks to me. And, you know, if whatever part of what I do or think rings true to you, then please, you know. And if you're struggling with the God, please borrow mine, because mine is nameless, formless, and is always looking after me. Always looking after me. Even when I think that's not what's happening. You know, it's happening. But the book also talks about observing the lives of people who are in the rooms and who have faith. Their lives get better. See, I want to be a skeptic, but it's hard to ignore the evidence in front of my eyes. You know, your life gets better if you do this. Maybe my life will get better if I do what you do. It sure can't hurt, because doing things my way was not really great. And the Freedom from Bondage lady, because I'm always probably going to circle back to her, but she talks a little bit about the insanity, and I want to make sure I talk about that, because I know I skip over it a bit. But she talks about the insanity and the unmanageability of her life, and what she said is, I only had to reflect on the contrast between the plans I made so many years ago for my life with what really happened to know that I couldn't manage my life drunk or sober. And believe, I did a lot of sober screwing up as well. AA has taught me that a willingness to believe was enough for a beginning. And she goes on to talk about, I could not quarrel with restore us to sanity, for my actions, drunk or sober, before AA were not those of a sane person. My desire to be honest with myself made it necessary for me to realize that my thinking was irrational. It had to be, or I could not have justified my erratic behavior the way I did. And her last word on this is, rationalization is giving a socially acceptable reason for socially unacceptable behavior, and socially unacceptable behavior is a form of insanity. And that's why I kept going back to that story, because. So it was about dropping the debate. Just keep talking? Okay. Well, you know, my other go-to books. If no one is familiar with the book Come to Believe, that was a great help to me as I struggled with a second step, and has been a great help to other people who I've, you know, people I've sponsored. But, you know, Bill Wilson has given a lot of talks, and in this, each chapter, little snip chapter, has a Bill quote from a letter or something. And he talks about looking at the evidence of recovery. And in a talk in 1960, Bill said, it is certain that all recipients of spiritual experience declare for the reality. I just told you about mine. It's sitting in the garden at St. Paul's Monastery. The best evidence of that reality is in the subsequent fruits. Those who receive these gifts of grace are very much changed people, almost invariably for the better. And yeah, I went back and I just put on the third step right away. Let's see. This is about simplicity and not overcomplicating it, because I am a smart person. I've said that before. I'll say it all the time. I'm well-educated and all of that happy stuff. But Bill Wilson, in a letter in 1955, said, "You are asking yourself, as all of us must, who am I? Where am I? Whence do I go? The process of enlightenment is usually slow. But in the end, our seeking always brings a finding. These great mysteries are, after all, enshrined in complete simplicity." Bill is just the bomb, really. He is a great writer and a great thinker, and whatever else his faults were. And this goes along with the Rumi Road, and this is from AA's Grapevine, 1961, April, Bill W. again. "Our concepts of a higher power and God, as we understand him, afford everyone a nearly unlimited choice of spiritual belief and action." So, you know, to those who say that AA is religious or they tell you what to do, I mean, out of the horse's mouth is no. That's not been my experience. There are some people who want to foist that on you, but if you go, as I go back to the original material, that's not true. That's just not true. And to Joe McHugh, he writes about this also. Anyway, he talks about, he kind of picks up on this in page 34. This is another good book, The Steps We Took. It kind of re-spins it in different words. It might be more understandable. Everyone has their words that hit them in the face, but... "One way we can come to believe is to see all the people around us whom God has changed." So keep coming back. Keep coming to the meetings. You know, listen, take in people's experience. I guess finally, and this is another one, I guess the thing to finish up with is this. This was another thing that I've gone back to again and again and again, when I was coming to believe, or when I was stuck in a bad, in a place that, just stuck in a place. But this is from Bill Wilson, a letter from Bill Wilson in 1950, from my other favorite book, my very worn out and well used As Bill Sees It. And what he says is, "Believe more deeply. Hold your face up to the light, even though for the moment you do not see." That's it.
Thank you, Leslie.
I've answered all your questions already, right?
Does anybody have any questions?
I guess I have. Oh, I guess not. I see.
Yeah, it's recording.
Yeah, they're recording, so.
What would your suggestion be for somebody with 5 years sober that had acquired faith and has lost faith and is losing hope, suffering with deep depression, isn't enjoying anything in life?
Well, I think my suggestion would be to continue to pray. Because that's how I feel, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that's true. Because I feel like God isn't listening to me doesn't mean that God is not listening to me. That's just a feeling. One of the things that I was taught very early was that feelings were not fact. And because I felt worthless or stupid didn't mean that I was worthless and stupid. It just meant that's how I felt and it'll pass. So as the God as I understand him understands when I'm not feeling it, and will patiently wait and patiently listen to whatever it is I have to say, even if it's that I'm not real sure you're there, you know, all right, I'm hurting, so what about it? And that's kind of how I see God. So, if I sponsored you, I would suggest to continue to pray, to get on your knees and pray. And if you feel you've got a mental health diagnosis, then get about taking care of that as well. But don't neglect to pray. It may be a feeling that doesn't have a basis in fact.
Do you have a favorite inspirational prayer?
Well, you know, it's really kind of hard to say at this point, but my go-to in the morning is a third step prayer, and I do love the Serenity Prayer always, and the full Serenity Prayer. I have that, like, on the wall in my home, but they've come and gone over time and whatever fits the situation, but the Serenity Prayer always helps me, and the third step prayer always helps me as well.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi. That was good, and well, I sort of came in a different way. I already believed in God. I was just kind of trying to figure out who the heck he was and how the heck did he let me circle down to this bottom that I hit. Because all I really knew about him was that he loved me. So I was on a search to find out who this God was. And I liked what you were saying about going to that woman's thing at the church.
At St. Paul's Monastery, Southside, Pittsburgh.
Okay, St. Paul's Monastery, outside of Pittsburgh, and where you had this, like, awakening. I was wondering if that included, this might be too personal, and you could tell me that, too, but because it was in a church, did it include the God, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, from the Bible type of a thing? That led you on that path, or?
I went to that monastery because it was an AA thing, and it was a Catholic monastery. They made no secret of being Catholic at that place. However, they were great friends of AA, and so the AA people ran the retreat. Now, there was a chapel available. If you were someone inclined to pray in the chapel or wanted to talk to a priest or have confession or something, there were people available. So it was very, very welcoming, very all about your option. And that retreat was all about AA, but in a location where you could tap into a formal religion if you cared to. But it was not forced on you. But the feeling I had wasn't like a Jesus Christ or anything. It was just, I felt relief. I just felt that it was going to be okay. I wasn't sure how, but it felt like all my stress and angst and fretting and everything was just leaving the top of my head like smoke out of a chimney. I hope that's helpful to you.
Anybody else?
Are you just stretching your fingers? Are you raising your hand? Yeah,
thanks again for coming and being so prepared.
I could talk a little more if you want, but I'm really kind of done.
Okay. Anyway, you know, when you're working with somebody and, you know, they admitted that, all right, so I have to admit that I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable just because all the facts point to that. But, you know, for the most part, I'm pretty sane, you know? And why do I have to admit that I'm insane or I need to be restored to sanity by some, I don't even know who this God thing is. So somebody who's just a real good cynic, and they're asking you for, you know, they're asking you to take them through the steps. You take them through the first step. The second step is, you know, I came to believe, and so they're going, yeah.
What's the, I mean, my answer is like, let's look at how your life has gone. Let's look, you know, we're our own best evidence, really, if we are willing to acknowledge that. That's always my answer, is like, let's go through then how your life has gone. Let's look at some of these decisions you made. What did you start out wanting to do, and where did you end up? Oh, okay, you know, I mean, that was the test I kept failing. You know, I was going to be all of this and all of that, and I'm drinking myself out of jobs, and, you know, it just doing things that I would still be ashamed of if I could remember them. So, blessedly, I can't. But, well, some of them I do, but, you know, whatever. But, you know, that's really, it's in the book, like she said, and that's also, you know, if I have to come up with excuses, it's probably not the most sane thing to do. If I can't logically explain why I did thus and so, you know, then, you know, why did I spit at that cop? I don't know. You got a good reason for that. So, because he had it coming to him. I don't know. But usually pointing to the evidence of their own life, if I dig deep.
So when you start working with a woman, do you have like a timetable that you work them through, or?
Not particularly, but I was not, as I was worked through the steps, and as I work through steps, I think, God, this is going to sound so lawyerish, but I'm going to say it anyway. With all due deliberate speed, kind of like Brown versus the Board of Education and school desegregation, I believe the steps need to be a felt experience. I could run through them, and many of us can run through them on brain power, but it doesn't mean anything until it gets into the heart and the gut as well as the brain. And that may take a little bit of time and a little bit of living. So, but I do, you know, I guess, I don't want to reveal all the secrets of the upcoming talks, but I do believe that due deliberate speed, and I know that's kind of a non-answer. Some people are ready to move on, and they're kind of taking it in and getting it on a gut level, and you can kind of tell when someone's faking it, when they're just like giving you the blah, 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 and they're running on intellect. And intellect has never done me any good in this program at all, except to read things and be willing. But the things that helped me the most, and still, like 38 years later, I can choke up reading about, you know, God doesn't make hard terms with those who seek Him. I believe that. I also believe, just to tell you what I believe, I believe that any of us who are here have been given a great gift. We've been given an opportunity to recover and to live as decent human beings, a life that we can be happy with and proud of. And it's up to us whether we're going to accept that gift. You know, God's handing it to us with a big red bow tied on it. So, and either we are going to say thank you and unwrap it and dig in and make best use of it, or we're going to throw it away. That's the part that's up to us. But I truly believe that we've all been given a gift. So. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks again, Leslie.